With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome to 4.0 to Pro, the pickleball podcast that focuses on a single shot, tip, or strategy to improve your pickleball game with every single pocket-sized episode. Our goal is to make you better on the court every time you hear our voices. And now your hosts, 4.something Michael O'Neill, and USA Pickleball National Silver Medalist, Senior Pro Scott Fliegelman.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of 4.0 to Pro, your pocket-sized pickleball podcast, which teaches you a single shot or strategy every single episode. I'm Michael O'Neill here in sunny Long Beach, California, joined by my good pal, Mr. Scott Fliegelman, Senior Pro Bad Arse, right now in Wichita, Kansas, for the fourth round of the NPL Senior Pro Tour. How's your hotel room?
About 100 yards from the Chicken and Pickle, so
that's cool.
Convenient. And we'll stumble over there in the morning, take on the Naples squad first thing on center court with the announcers.
Fun. So you guys, YouTube, I'll put the show out on Saturday, the day that you get on the court. So it'll be first thing on Saturday morning. So if you're hearing this now, the day it comes out, jump on YouTube, look for the NPL Senior Pro Tour, and our man there will be right there on center court.
I'll do my best.
On the 5.0 to Pro show. Anyway, so today we're actually going to talk about something that I consider the most technical shot in pickleball that's not a, you know,
trick
tweener.
Shot.
Yeah, like that's not a trick shot. It's the most technical shot in pickleball that we have to do all the time, and that is roll volleys. We're at the kitchen. The other teams, typically at the baseline or in the transition zone, they try to hit a third or whatever, a fifth, and we're trying to keep them back generally. The ball goes below the net, and we have to hit the thing back to them with topspin, hopefully aiming at their feet and not plow it into the net. And because of all of those factors, it shows up as a somewhat difficult ball to hit, Scott.
And because of those factors, it fits in nicely to the 4.0 to Pro show and doesn't see much life in the 3.0 to 4.0 show, because a ball below net level at that level should likely be dinked back, because we don't have the skills to roll the ball with topspin from below the net and keep it below their attackable zone on the other side. So this is a more advanced shot.
One thing I love about this particular shot is that it's very drillable, isn't it? Whether you have a ball machine or a person, you can really work on this shot over and over and over again. You can even do it on a wall. So it's a very drillable, and sometimes they're not, by the way. Like backhand slice dinks are not as drillable by yourself. You actually have to have a person to do that. But for this one, you can literally go to a wall somewhere and work on this thing in your house, much to the chagrin of your neighbors or significant other. Let's talk about the scenario of this. I alluded to it, which is you've got another team that's trying to work their way up to the non-volley zone. And by the way, this is an audio podcast, as you guys know, because you've paid attention to it over the years that we've been on, the 7, 8, 9 years that we've been on the show. This is probably one of the more challenging things to describe with no visuals. So we're going to do our best here on this episode to do that. But Scott, let's talk about the scenario. If I've missed anything in my description of how you get into this roll volley situation.
I think there are two main scenarios where we need this shot. We are the returning team. We've made it up pretty darn close or at the non-volley zone. Our opponents are trying to hit a third or a fifth and get up and play kitchen ball with us. So we're hitting a fourth or a sixth.
Kitchen ball.
Kitchen
ball. I'm not familiar with that. Can you name that in the correct way?
Kitchen ball is the four-person ritual kitchen exchange.
Thank you.
Yes, very similar. So yes, we're there. We're in that area code. And our opponents have hit a pretty effective third or fifth that we make contact out of the air, yet below net level. And we're hitting a shot designed to keep the ball at their feet of a fast advancing serving team. Second scenario is that this is used whilst enjoying a four-person ritual kitchen exchange, and you have drawn out of your opponents an attackable ball or a ball in which to instigate upon that might be knee high, might be thigh high, might be ankle high. And this is the technique off either the forehand or the backhand side, the roll volley, that is likely the best way to instigate, stir the pot, cause some trouble, and get ourselves an even more attackable ball above our head.
I was going to say this fits squarely between your opponents have hit a ball that's high and you can crank it, like we talked about on the last episode, or too low when you've got to surrender and you can't do much with it. You literally just have to dink the ball. You've got nothing else to do. You've spoken about this before, Scott, where as you get more advanced, the X gets lower on this roll volley. The X being how low you can take the ball and still make the shot, right? An advanced player will be able to hit these things like ankle high, whereas someone who's maybe closer to the 4-0 range needs a ball just barely below the net to be able to hit this same stroke. And then as you advance, that ball sort of gets lower and lower where you're able to take the shot.
And in addition to your skills, we don't want to dismiss the value of mobility, flexibility, kinesthetic awareness of how you move your body through space. If we're going to be aggressive on a ball that's knee high, we're going to need to prepare the paddle well below contact point, which we'll talk more about in a second. And in order to do that, we're going to need to be well balanced with one of your favorite things, a stable base. And in order to do that on a shin high ball, we need pretty good mobility and flexibility.
Do you like to keep your paddle? So one of the guys I've drilled with in the past, a very good player, a pro, likes to keep his paddle below net. He's in that backhand 10 p.m. position, but a little bit below the net, a couple of inches below, because he's assuming that ball's going to get there and he's able to swipe up on that shot. Or do you prefer something more net high? And if you need to lower it, you lower it.
As a coach, I think it's dependent on a number of different things. I like most players who are holding the paddle with a continental or easternental grip, which means a quarter or an eighth of a turn toward the clockwise side of the grip, assuming you're a right-handed player. I like those players tilting toward the backhand side because that will be the side that they'll use as their shield when playing defense. We have some players now moving even further over to the clockwise side, a full-on eastern forehand or even semi-western. These are players that can hold their paddle up like a lollipop on the forehand side. And we've referenced this a little bit in the past about, do we sit on backhand or sit on forehand? We're getting an increasing number of players who are better off sitting forehand because of their more dominant forehand grip. If you and I hold a continental grip straight out in front of us, we can't even really get our forehand side of the paddle to face our opponents. It's facing off to the left. So that hopefully addresses your question a little bit, not necessarily the height part, but whether it's backhand or forehand.
The visual of the lollipop thing to me is kind of interesting because what I thought of is literally holding your paddle right in front of your face, like with your left hand, like on the actual paddle face, and then grabbing it with your, whatever your hand is, if you're right handed or left handed. And that ends up making the flat part of the grip on kind of the flat part of your palm. And I can see why you could be able to pull off a sort of shielded shot if somebody's hitting it like at your face or something. You're sort of holding it, but really that is an Eastern grip. And it's what I started when I started playing pickleball. That was my grip. And I was great with forehands, but I found myself really struggling on the backhand side when I got up to the net. In fact, our very first lesson that we took together, remember I talked to you about it. I'm like, this is really weak. It feels really weak as a grip. And you said, well, you're very Eastern right now, which of course came from tennis or actually probably came from racquetball because you hold it really Eastern for racquetball. And now that I'm fully continental, it's funny that the sport is easing back to kind of where I was at the beginning a little bit.
Yeah, and a solution that we may or may not have discussed at the time, but now certainly we would, is it's fine. Go ahead and be Eastern with your forehand. Another way, listeners, to find this Eastern forehand is place your paddle on the ground and then put your hand on it and pick it up.
Yes.
You are probably in an Eastern forehand at that point. So that's fine on the forehand, more challenging on the backhand. If you are inclined to hit a two-handed backhand, stick a left-handed Eastern forehand grip on there And now you've got two Eastern forehands, essentially. And there are a whole bunch of really good players playing pickleball that way.
That's really interesting. All right, let's try to describe the roll volley. And what I'll say is, no matter how you get there, and there's a lot of different ways to get there, the ultimate goal is to brush up on the very back of the ball. So you're really trying to impart as much topspin as you can to get this thing to dip back into the court and get a little bit of loft on it so that the ball, A, goes over the net, and B, drops into the court and doesn't go long. We're going to talk a little bit about, do we want it to go long? No matter what we talk about in the next couple minutes, the ultimate goal is to get you to brush with that paddle face on the very back of the ball from low to high and impart some topspin on the ball.
Well, let's keep in mind for our converting tennis players that there's only so much topspin we can get on this thing, given it's a wiffle ball and a stick, and we're lacking the strings and the felt to really be able to get topspin. But we can get enough on there for sure. So yeah, it's a topspin volley, maybe just below net level, down to about ankle level, where I'll go ahead and throw one of my most important tips out right now for a number of these shots is a foot long is a heck of a lot better than an inch low. We need to be willing to miss long and high on these shots, give the topspin a fighting chance of bringing it into the court, and definitely give your surprised opponents a chance to hit this ball that may have been heading long and we'll never find out.
Let's make them hit, you know? By the way, you guys, I don't know if you know this, but before I started this podcast, I started a little mini, little clothing brand called Make 'em Hit. And that was exactly the reason why, because when I played singles, I was so upset at myself for making unforced errors. I'm like, man, you have to make them hit the ball. Like, make them hit the ball. Because sometimes, as we all know, we do dumb things. We hit balls that are going out, or we hit balls long or whatever. Maybe they're going to hit an out ball, as we all do 974 times because we haven't listened to the show. Above the titties, no hitties. You know what I'm saying? That's all I'm saying. Make them hit. Make them hit the ball. All right, let's talk about the actual physical shot here. What I've heard this maybe taught 746 different ways, some of which are lower your paddle face. So it's literally like, if you can imagine your paddle, your handle straight up and down. So you've dropped your paddle face all the way to the ground, and then you're flicking up so that the paddle face is now completely up and the handle is all the way down. That is the wrist flicky version. Then I've heard the, well, no, don't use your wrist at all. And like Ben Johns stabilizes his wrist and he swings through, but notice that the paddle doesn't move at all. So Scott, how do you like to teach this shot to your students?
So I would like us to clarify whether we're talking forehand or backhand. Okay. And I'm going to go ahead and guess you've started with backhand.
I did start with backhand. Sorry.
I just kind of visualized a backhand.
Yeah.
The way you were describing that. So we can start there. Let's talk grip. Continental is nice. Easternental still works fairly well. So those are options. We'll talk about the second hand options in a second. I believe that the answer to the question you're posing has to do with height of the ball off the ground. I think a slightly higher ball, net level or just below, should be primarily a shoulder joint dominant long lever swing with a firmer wrist, a somewhat closed angled paddle face, and you brush over the back of the ball with a long lever with a little bit of assistance with the wrist toward the end. The lower the ball is, the more the wrist joint is going to need to be in play. Either way, I really want that this player and this shot to be considering a relaxed grip, and wrist tension needs to be pliable. So if it's a slightly higher ball, we can snug up that wrist tension, but the wrist is going to have to get looser the lower the ball so that that wrist joint can get involved.
We haven't actually talked about this, but as you were saying that, I thought, where's the bailout point? Because there is one. I spoke about it earlier, which is the X. Wherever your X happens to be, whether it's an inch off the ground or it's an inch below the net, there's got to be a point where you have to realize, oh, I can't actually hit this ball this way. I don't have the skill set currently to hit this roll volley, so I'm going to have to bail out and hit a dink, right? Wherever that happens to be, that's something you got to be cognizant of throughout this entire process. Here's the deal, Scott. What I find personally is, as we all know, 2023 has been the year of the 2E for me. My roll volley is way better with a 2E than it is with a 1E. Why?
Well, it's what I said earlier. I think a lot of it has to do with grip. And I think when you put that second hand on there, somewhere in the eastern forehand, left hand on the paddle, you present a more closed paddle face.
Yeah,
and you have a choice with this closed paddle face. You can swing on a level plane and the ball goes into the middle of the net, or you're forced to swing low to high and you've got your two hands and wrists working, you know, with a fulcrum in between so that you can really brush up over the back of the ball. And that's why I think that works better. And for those inclined to use a second hand, this is likely to be a better solution for you than the Ben John style one-handed backhand roll.
Right. Which, by the way, if you came from like a ping pong background, and you see this all the time on the court, some of these people have these incredible rolls. And I'm like, man, what were you? I've been playing ping pong since I was 7. You know, okay, I get it now. I didn't realize Ben was a big ping pong dude, but that was his thing, I guess.
Well, and I've been on the other side of the table tennis net from Ben, and both me and Colin, I have. And he's better than me. That's for darn sure. But he and Colin, as teenagers, they had a kind of national level indoor table tennis center nearby. Oh. And they were multiple days a week there learning from the best players in the country and got very highly ranked. I don't know quite how highly ranked, but you know, they brought a lot of those skills into the sport. And Ben's, you know, one-handed backhand roll volley is one of those shots that didn't really exist much before Ben, in my opinion. Mm. And when we were sharing, or I was listening to his tips at the ping pong table, he shared with me that I was being too wristy with my right. backhand topspin ping pong shot. And to firm up that angle and allow the hinge point to be, you know, higher up on my body, closer to my shoulder.
Yeah, he's got a very firm wrist when he does this shot.
And I think others like Zane and JW and others who hit beautiful backhand roll volley don't have the table tennis background.
Right.
And as such, have needed to adapt a more wrist-centric shot.
Right. You know, it's funny. I was doing a speaking gig in Orlando and we had this pro ping pong guy. And I said, dude, I play a lot of pickleball. You know, give me some tips. I want this roll. So we started hitting. It was very funny. I was playing with my pickleball paddle. We were using a pickleball on a ping pong table. And he was using the case that his ping pong paddle came in. And he was amazing with the case, this fiberless case. Anyway, he was also very stable with that wrist and that elbow. How he hit, which I thought was really interesting. I will say that the biggest challenge, I think, for a lot of us is finding whatever the sweet spot is for us. Like, what's the best version of this particular shot that works for us the best?
I will add, and I was not going to submit myself to the potential embarrassment, but there is lore of Ben taking on and defeating all comers at the ping pong table using nothing but his iPhone.
Well, that's what this guy does. That's so funny you said that.
Well, it must be a thing.
This guy uses an iPhone 6 right. and he beats everybody.
I know. I didn't want to go there.
Here's what's also interesting is that as we were hitting, I was hitting a two-y. I was hitting a two-handed ping pong backhand, even with a ping pong paddle. And I was finding how much more stable it was. So whatever that is for you guys. Very interesting.
The entertainment portion of the show.
Yeah, if you want to go for a two-handed ping pong shot, go for it. All right. So the Zane JW version, maybe a little wristy. The Ben Johns version, definitely a more stable, like setting your elbow and wrist and flowing up. But you have, Scott Fliegelman, a versus hitting it sort of straight up and down, you have a different angle, if you will, on this shot.
I would say I'm somewhere in between those two guys. JW gets that paddle straight up and down. And I would say I'm a little bit more on a 45 degree angle. I don't have quite the wrist flexibility that he does. I am in an easternental, which is shocking, you know, for my tennis friends that I'm like with a forehand centric grip hitting a roll volley on the backhand side. But that grip actually allows me to drop the paddle face some. And then I've mentioned the shoulder joint as being rather important, but I think the second most important joint here are my knees. Mm. I've really got to bend my knees. And I do a lot of squatting and lunging. And this is a great time to be able to lower the whole body in a balanced manner to be able to execute this shot without hinging at my waist to get down low.
You guys didn't see how proud I was when I said you have another angle on this, but I was very proud of that. One thing about the backhand, Scott, is I think of Anna Bright, who does such a great job of, as the ball is coming into her body, she shifts. She's obviously a righty, and her tui is on the left side. She shifts to the right, so she gives herself more room on that backhand to execute the shot. This is something we do because we have a little bit of time on this particular ball. This is typically a drop that we're trying to hit this thing back. So we have a couple of milliseconds versus in the middle of a firefight to hit this ball. You give yourself a little bit of space. I always think about it like boxing. You know, you push the guy away and then you have a little more space to do what you got to do. But in pickleball, if you shift one way or the other, if you're obviously, if you're lefty, you shift to the left. If you're righty, you shift to the right. And that gives you a little bit more room to get your arms straight so you can make a lever out of your shoulders and your legs to hit this ball with enough topspin to go over the net. I think one mistake I see fairly often is to let the thing get inside your shoulders, and you don't want that. You want this thing to be outside of your body a little bit so you can really lever that thing in a topspin way.
Especially with the two hands. Yeah. I think the one hand gives you a little more flexibility, but with the two hands, we don't want to be tied up swinging at balls. We want to swing at strikes, figure out where your favorite strike zone is. There's no batter's box here in pickleball, so just move your feet to allow you to swing at strikes, not only for this shot, but pretty much every shot you hit on the pickleball court. So I use two hands sometimes, one hand at other times, but you're right. I do have the time, since this is likely a drop shot, to adjust my feet and get this ball just about as high as I can, but in lateral relation to my body, out away from me and not inside my shoulders.
So that was backhand. I will say, Scott, that as a guy who's a drummer, I'm very cognizant of how my right and my left hands look as I'm, you know, doing a single stroke roll or a double stroke roll or whatever. My backhand version of this roll looks very different than my forehand version. My forehand version is way wristier than my backhand version, and I can wait until the last millisecond to roll it. And that's because I think I've been hitting, you know, balls with paddles or rackets forever. And it's my forehand roll, I'm very comfortable with. I'm happy to do it from, you know, the right or the left side. And it's less shouldery, a little more wristy, if you will. And I'm fine with it, you know? So I guess what I'm saying is maybe it doesn't have to be exactly the same for each side. If you're more comfortable with a little more juice on one side than the other, okay, that's fine. As long as we're still brushing up on the back of the ball, the differences between a forehand and a backhand for you are what?
Well, let's be clear on the differences. We're suggesting that our listeners work on a firmer wrist and a more shoulder joint dominant backhand roll.
Yes.
Yet on the forehand side, this is a wristy shot.
Are you agreeing with me? Or are you?
Yes.
Are you? Okay.
No, forehand is a wristy shot and should be a wristy shot. You need the wrist joint. I still want, you know, I want the grip tension relaxed and I want the wrist tension relaxed that allows the paddle to drop below the hand and drop below the contact point. And we're primarily using, you know, the wrist joint, the wrist snap to brush up over the back of the ball.
Yeah.
And of course, this feels good to you as a tennis player. This is a shot that you've been hitting for years and years and years. You still need the knees to bend. We still need a stable base and get as low as possible. But then this will be primarily a wrist joint dominant swing.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So I'm not totally off base with this one.
No.
Yeah.
Use that wrist.
It's right in there. Same idea though. My X is lower for my forehand than it is for my backhand. Probably not abnormal.
Doesn't surprise me.
Right. It's part of the deal. You can do a little bit of English, a little bit of English on that. I can anyway, on that forehand side, as I'm sure you can. You can misdirect. There's a lot of fun things you can do with the same shot on the forehand side. Let's talk about how to drill this. We've got somebody probably in the transition zone-ish, right? Trying to hit a drop or baseline, trying to hit a drop. And you're just trying to roll this thing back at their feet to the baseline. Do you have specific drills for this?
Well, it'll end up, not surprisingly, with a 7-11 game, because this is a great opportunity to do that. But the intermediary step would be, if you have a basket of balls and a partner, put them 2-3 steps inside the baseline, hitting balls out of their hand that are designed to drop into the kitchen, and you just work on hitting balls back to their feet
right,
without putting them up eye level. you know, yeah. for them. This is a great shot. Now, this is also, you know, like I said, this is an instigating shot. It's not only a keep them back on a fourth or sixth shot. This is a shot that we might break out later in the rally during the four-person ritual exchange, where you get a knee-high ball thanks to the proximity of your directly across from you opponent and the surprise factor. This can be a very effective shot. We've talked about, you know, targeting their paddle side shoulder and also getting this ball up, being willing to miss long and high, not low and into the net. So you can drill it that way too. You can be directly across from each other playing an instigator game. You know, one player is the instigator, the other player is on defense, just looking to lightly counter a reset. And then we just keep playing with the X. How high off the ground do I need this ball to be on my forehand and my backhand side to execute the techniques we've been talking about?
I was going to say, there has to be a bit of a gambler's mentality on this, not during the game, but speed ups are different than rolls to keep them back. If you're already all four up there, man, there's going to be a couple of shots where you go, you know, especially if you're facing a, you and I are relatively slight in the grand scheme of things. You face some dude who's 6'4" and wide. You go, I've got a huge target here. I'm going to take a couple of chances trying to get the guy in the right shoulder because it's huge. I have a huge target there. And if he avoids it, if he's Neo and he can get out of the way, it's going to go long. Like I'm going to take the chance of getting that shot because it might go long, but at least it's going to keep him honest, right?
Yeah, my attack or instigator meter gets pegged the bigger the opponent directly across from me.
Right.
And it doesn't mean I'm not going to eat a few. You know, they're going to come back at me, you know, 100 miles an hour. And I go, well, sorry, man, that didn't work.
That didn't work out.
But you're right. It's a gambler's mentality. You got to take your chances. But remember, it's the proximity to each other that starts off 14 feet away. And then if you're taking a knee-high ball, that means it's probably a couple of feet into the non-volley zone. So now you're only 12 feet away from the guy across right. from you. And that's close. You know, yeah. that's tough. And, you know, the surprise element. Hey, sometimes the surprise element gets a lucky bonus. If you haven't done this with a hitting partner, you know, stand at the non-volley zone, have your hitting partner take a ball, start at eye level. They're standing on the opposite non-volley zone and keep lowering and lowering the ball. And then you have to let them know when you can't see the ball anymore. And depending upon your respective heights, when they get down to about 8, 10, 12 inches off the ground, the net tape is going to be in your line of sight, and you're not going to be able to see the ball. Now, you can't count on this, but I'm going to guess 25% of the time that I'm aggressively using a roll volley on a ball 10 inches off the ground, my opponent cannot see my contact. And that works out really well. But I can't count on it. It's just kind of being rewarded for my aggressive behavior.
Especially in the 2 milliseconds you have to process that the ball is coming, like, you know, at your chest or something. So,
yeah. And I think I've referenced before, I've been talking a lot about it lately, that one of the things that makes better players, 5-0s better than 4-0s, pros better than 5-0s, is processor speed.
Yeah.
How quickly can we roll through the dozens of options that we have here, select the correct one, given all of the input that I'm taking in, and then execute the right shot.
Ultimately, as my racquetball coach said, you know, he goes, he always wants to distill everything down to an A or a B. If we can get that way in pickleball, where we just have two choices, then we're going to win a lot of games. And that is the case here.
Folks, amen, brother.
Folks, you've now just listened to another episode of 4.0 to Pro. Hey, just for fun, why don't you go out there and play a little pickleball and have some fun and work on some roll volleys and be better at pickleball? How's that sound? What do you think, Scott?
Let's do it.
Hey, good luck tomorrow, dude.
And thank you.
We'll be watching you on the YouTube television. And folks, you've now just listened to another episode of 4.0 Pro. It's on Instagram. And thanks for listening. You guys rock. And we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to 4.0 to Pro. For more tips, find us on Instagram at 4.0 to Pro. If you have a pickleball question, submit it at picklehelp.com. Now, get out there and dominate. But don't forget to have fun.